Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. Today is Thursday, June the 6th. We welcome you to the show. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 and that puts you in queue to talk to us. We would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It is a blessing to be here once again to share the space with everybody who chooses to tap into the show and makes their contribution, whether it's done silently from wherever you are in the world or whether you call in and give us a piece of your mind. It's all just such a blessing to participate. And the work that we're here to accomplish is the work of shifting the content of our minds into that which is true from that which is false. And there's an interesting little piece in the whole puzzle that the world has totally and completely misinterpreted. And that is that the moment that we have some form of hostility or fear show up in our minds, that our minds are now stuck in a lie. That our minds are showing us things that are not true. That mind in hostility or fear is locked into corrupt data. And that corrupt data, until it is owned and changed, until the output of the mind based on that corrupt data is shifted, the mind will always live in the state of a lie. And then corresponding with that lie is that the cells of the so-called body that contain that lie are in a state of degeneration. So the perception being somewhere out in space in hostility or fear is a reflection of the condition of a cell or a set of cells within the structure and reflect the disease process. What we've called the non-being mind, that is the mind based in hostility or fear, is always trying to justify itself and get people to believe that somehow it could possibly be useful to them. And our offering with this work is that hostility or fear is nothing but an indicator in your structure that there's something in your structure that's off base, and it's time to shift and change that. And the core of being able to do that in a reliable, consistent way in the ancient Aramaic was called forgiveness. Nothing whatsoever to do with letting other people off the hook because your physiology is producing something based in hostility or fear, but rather how you access the part of your mind that holds the hostility or fear, whether it comes from something that you've experienced in your own life and therefore have built into your mind as a way of understanding, a way of seeing, a way of perceiving, a way of believing the world, or whether it comes from perhaps a pattern from a previous generation or perhaps 1,000 previous generations, really doesn't matter. Forgiveness is about accessing the part of the mind that holds the hostility and fear and changing it. And the instant that that is done, there is a literal shift that happens in so-called chemistry within the cell. We do a workshop called On Creating Consciously, where we tap into this whole idea of what is it that's going on in the cell that we call chemistry. And what we find is that the so-called chemical is just a little tail end of a whole range of frequency that inserts itself in the cell and shifts or changes the way that that cell organizes itself. And we call, when we see that energy in the cell, chemistry, but the truth is it's just a reflection of a broader frequency. It's interesting, if you look back into the Aramaic language where they understood all of these things, the opening words in the book of John, where we're told it's the religious idea, and it's something about in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. In Aramaic, there's no such concept existent there. Those opening words in John say, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. A second possible way of translating that is, in the beginning was the willed action, and the willed action became flesh. So when I initiate a thought, I literally insert a frequency in a cell that one who's limited to looking at the cell will call chemistry. And when I find a way to change that which I insert in the cell, then the cell itself changes. And the thing that triggered this particular opening for today was, we've heard from Carrie Ellis over the last couple of years as she's been tapping into this work. And Carrie's a young lady who lives in, well, I'm not sure now. She just left Colorado to go to Florida. And when I spoke to her recently, she was saying that she's on her way back to Michigan, which is where I first met her about 30 years ago. She's co-authoring a book called The 21st Century Human with Teddy Mulder, who is another young lady who I met about 30 years ago. And one of the quotes, I'm writing an introduction to her book, and one of the quotes that I came across in her book that she's offering is a quote from Bruce Lipton, who says, "The moment you change your perception is the moment you rewrite the chemistry of your body. Perception is chemistry. Mind energy becomes flesh." And when you recognize that particular happening and you recognize the power of what you do with your mind, you recognize the power of cause. And we're here with this work supporting people understanding where the cause level of life is, where the cause level of the so-called chemistry of the cell is, where the cause level of the function of the organ is, and where the cause of both life and death happen. If you go back 2,000 years ago, you hear a gentleman who was a physicist, who was a physiologist, and he says the power of life and death is in our words. That literally, the thoughts we think, the mind energy we engage in, become the chemistry of the cell, and the cell is either living or dying according to what we do with that. And that our hostility and fear is a warning signal that we are doing something on a cellular level that is destructive to ourselves. And you look at the whole culture walking around in its grief, in its rage, in its pain, and its stories of drama and trauma, having no clue that it's creating the cellular level called chemistry of the body and producing its own diseases. And the ancient Aramaic had an understanding. A man named Yeshua 2,000 years ago had an understanding of how exactly to access the parts of the mind that need to be changed. Oftentimes, the part of the mind that needs to be changed is the one that's been patterned by 1,000 generations of insanity and disease, 1,000 generations of hostility and fear. And he invites us into a process called forgiveness. Now, sadly, his Aramaic ideas were turned around totally and completely backward. So now the chemistry is backward. And we are told in the Greek translations that, of course, other people are the problem in our lives, and all we have to do is forgive them. And we've been taught that forgiveness is letting other people off the hook, because our mind, therefore our chemistry, therefore our state of love or hostility or fear, is caused by someone else. And it's the king of lies. You know, it's said that Hitler used to say, make the lie big enough, tell it often enough, and everybody will believe it. Well, the big lie that's been told is, you made me. It's a way to kill your own cellular structure. It's a way to kill relationship. It's the way to destroy a life. And yet, it's become the way of life in our civilizations on the planet today. We're inviting you to consider that if your cells are yelling out in pain, that is physical pain, emotional pain, relationship pain, financial pain, whatever it happens to be, or a lack of joy and aliveness, that instead of looking to the world outside of you, instead of telling yourself a lie, well, you know, I'm feeling this pain because of what Mary said. I'm only hurting because Charlie did this. I'm only sad because this happened. No, all of that is part of the lie. You are only whatever you want to put behind the words, I am only, because those energies are contained within your structure. And if you're sticking to your story, if you're lost in your story, and you can't see outside your story, it's kind of like the fish swimming in water. The fish says, what's water? This is just what is. And if we've been brought up in an environment of pain and drama and trauma, like the fish in water, most people just hold, that's what is, because the whole mind energy system is founded on whatever that is. Our invitation to you is to step above that and to step back to a mind that in the ancient teachings was called the mind of Christ. Not a religious idea, but where most of the culture 2,000 years ago thought in terms of hostility and fear. And, you know, the Jews thought it was the Arabs, and the Arabs thought it was the Jews, and everybody knew it was the Romans, and on and on and on goes the game. It's all somebody else's fault. Yeshua says, I invite you into a different mind, and that is the mind in you that was in what was called Christ. Not a person, but rather a state of mind that is achievable by every person who can see past the water that they're swimming in, past the things in their mind that cause them pain, but are just the things that everybody knows are true. Anything that reflects itself as you think about it and perceive it as some form of pain, of hostility or fear, is a lie. And so this invitation is to come back to the true mind of love. And our definition of love is a really simple and easy one. Hold a newborn child. You know exactly what human life is. And you know exactly what the mind of Christ is. That's it. It's not a religious idea. That's it. That mind, that presence of love. And when you begin to retrain yourself to speak from that mind, instead of the one that everybody in your family system or your community or your culture knows is true, that, well, you know, there are those other people over there that caused our pain, and, well, you know, we'll be big about it, we'll forgive them. We're inviting you into a whole different mind. Yeshua invites each person into a whole different mind. And that is the mind where the presence of love is continuous. Not always easy. If you've been steeped in a culture based in some form of hostility or fear, or dogma based in fear, then that fear-based thinking looks normal and is addictive and is hard to give up. Well, a man named Yeshua invites you to give it up. We're inviting you to give it up. If there's anything in your mind that, when you think about it, reflects fear in you, then you've given up your human life. Instead of giving up your human life, give up the thinking. Change the chemistry, which changes the emotions. And now the emotions are a reflection of the presence of human life. It's an awesome shift to make. It is a work if you've been brought up in a state other than that active presence of love. But that's the work that we invite you into. That's the mind we invite you to live in. And we're working on developing a community here of folks who join in that pursuit, as opposed to the pursuits of the world that want to make sure that somebody else knows they're the cause of our pain and that they are adequately punished. So a little different track than the standard thinking of the world. The act of forgiveness, if your mind is reflecting some form of hostility or fear, is the act of going inside yourself and changing the content of your mind, therefore the content of your cell, therefore the so-called chemistry of your body. There is no physical disease. There is only a reflection of the energy that is organizing the cell in the state that it reflects. Change that, you change the state of the cell. If you're not familiar with that process of forgiveness, it's freely available on our website. We do have the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It's actually out of print right now, but you can download it free from our website. We do have it available in a set of 6 CDs, an unabridged reading of the book. We do have a 2-hour DVD of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, a 4-hour DVD, a 4-hour CD. All those things are available, but you can also go to the website and just download the book. You can also, if you go to our website, www.whyagain.org, in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a link that says Start Here. That link will deliver to you dozens and dozens of links, but the first ones are Chapter 24 of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It goes into explaining the forgiveness process, and the second link is the actual worksheet process. The next 6 links are radio shows where we've guided somebody through the whole process. When you listen to those shows, you will know exactly how to forgive. Will you do it? I don't know. Most people are addicted to the content of their minds, to the belief systems that hold that somebody else is the problem in their lives. Few have the courage to actually look inside themselves and begin the kind of transformation that we're inviting them to do. However, we happen to be blessed. They come and listen to this show. They work with us in doing this work. So that's our invitation. And Jeannie, do we have David with us today? Do we have Dr. Kim?
They are both with us and they're both on.
Good. Well, let's say hello, gentlemen. How do you be today?
Doing very well, Michael. Thank you for asking. Beautiful day here at Heartland, and things are going well.
Okay, anything exciting to report?
No, nothing that I know of.
All right, how about Dr. Tim? How do you be, sir?
Doing beautifully, thank you. And I guess what I would have that's to report is from our Tuesday support group, another real powerful thing happened. We had somebody who's been coming for quite a while and working the worksheet process, and she had kind of a breakthrough of many levels this past week in doing a worksheet. And she started with what she thought was a level 1 or level 2 upset issue. And by the time she was in the middle of the worksheet, it was at a 9 or a 10. And what she tapped into was that it did not resonate for her on the worksheet where it says, hold a newborn and use that as your experience of love. And she has always had very negative associations to holding newborn babies. She's afraid of that. She has very negative associations to when she was a child. And that really got stirred up for her. And she became very clear that that was one of the roadblocks to her having more success with the worksheet process. And then she was able to get very clear about an experience where she felt that loving energy in her life when she gave up the idea of trying to make it work, that she would hold the image of the newborn. And she tapped into a memory of a time when she was at a seminar, a training seminar, where there were very loving adults holding her and supporting her and sending her loving energy. And that's the image she now uses. And it provided a tremendous breakthrough for her, and it resonated with several other people in the group that they had also been having difficulty trying to use the imagery of holding a newborn, and it freed them up to just choose whatever image they have that gets them in touch with the most loving energy, memories, feelings, thoughts that they have in their experience. So that was another powerful thing that happened in the group on Tuesday, and I wanted to make sure I shared that.
Very cool. Awesome. And yeah, you know, I think we've shared on the show before, Jeannie had one client she used to work with that she could not tap into anything loving until she went and actually got a hold of her cat and put it on her lap. And, of course, with the question about the newborn, you know, many people have had negative experiences, but the negative experiences around the newborn have been their own. And, of course, the invitation is, imagine holding the newborn and tap into the essence of the newborn, and that oftentimes helps people to shift into, oh, so I'm not focusing on me, my pain, my trauma, my fear, but on the actual essence of the newborn, which clearly everybody comes forward with the same answer being, you know, it's based in the experience of love. And yeah, some people have got a lot of things to work through with their trauma, their own trauma, not the essence of the child, but their own trauma around thinking about a newborn child. So, yes, for sure, that's one way to do it. But, yes, anytime, whatever it is that can tap you back into that awesome presence of love, whatever that experience is, and that's what takes you there. And so, cool. Glad she made that breakthrough. That's awesome.
It was delightful, and it opened the space for several other people to be able to talk about their own issues relating to that. And again, anything that clears the space and gives people permission, we're all about it.
Yeah, I remember one physician who had, you know, asked that question in the workshop, you know, tap into the essence of the newborn. And all he could go into was his story about a birth that he had attended where a child had died and his trauma about that. And it's like, okay, so now we know that that's energy that's in you to be forgiven, but can you tap into the essence of a newborn rather than the trauma of being engaged as a physician in the passing of a child and the pain you have about death and such? And that made all the difference in the world for him to be able to do that. But the first response was that recent happening, that recent memory that was very painful for him. And that blocked him, you know, being able to move past and touch into the essence of that newborn life. But one of the things I love is that when we have an audience, and of course not everybody, because there are people who have pain and trauma around that, when we have an audience large enough and ask that question, there are enough people there who are not in their own trauma to be able to bypass and to really tap into the essence of the newborn. And it always comes up with this awesome list of descriptors of the child. And to me, the ultimately working toward that, if someone has a block to tapping into the essence of the newborn, working toward that to get to the point where we recognize that human life is the essence of love, and as the essence of love, to be able to move in the direction of functioning out of that mind of love is the thing that's going to provide us with the mind energy that really puts us on track for human life. You know, we live in a culture that pushes death, that pushes insanity at every turn. And it's almost a classic case of, well, what we want to do here is get rid of human life. Well, we talk about this nice newborn, but you know, you got to get that kid into hostility and fear. You got to show him that he's got to be able to punch somebody in the nose to protect himself. It's a dangerous world, and convince people to give up that mind. And the restoration of that mind is really the essence of this work, ultimately, to be able to do that. And so we're definitely here to support that and to invite people to look into anything inside themselves that is less than that presence of love, and in so doing, to be able to apply the tool for collapsing perception, which, tying in with this this quote from Carrie and Teddy's book on the 21st century human, from Bruce Lipton, who's a cell biologist, if you aren't familiar with him, the moment you change your perception is the moment you rewrite the chemistry of your body. If the chemistry of the body is based in trauma and pain, the rewrite of necessity includes the collapsing of the hostility and fear-based mind and the return to the mind that we all started out in. And that's certainly a challenge, but the awesome act of that tool of forgiveness is just, it always, always amazes me whenever I guide somebody through a worksheet, what they drop into the minute they get to that core step of forgiveness. It's just amazing. And again, we invite you to go to the website and download those radio shows where we walk somebody through the process. Step by step, here's how you forgive. It's a reliable, consistent way, and if you persistently practice it, you will change. You will shift out of the mind of the world and into that mind that is based in the active presence of love. And to build a whole community based in that, I love that ancient African proverb that says, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So I appreciate each and every one of you. Dr. Tim, I appreciate you being on the team to do that. David, Jeannie, Julie, Chuck and Magda. You know, the list is so long of all the folks that are participating. I know whether Peter's on with us from Sweden today, working in on another continent with these tools and bringing them forward. Those folks in the Middle East that are working with the tools, it's amazing to see how many true humans are willing to come together and create a space where we can dissolve the rage, the guilt, fear. We're just in a super security, maximum security prison facility in Ionia, Michigan, and worked with 36, that's the first session that we did there with 36 high security, highly guarded prisoners. And to watch them with the willingness to shift into, you know, there's a group of guys carrying a load that's just bigger than, you know, most of us out here could imagine. And to watch those faces come in long, no eye contact, you know, just like dead flesh walking. In many of the cases of folks who came into that room that first day, and to watch the enthusiastic and excited minds that were tweaked as Rex and Mitzi and Jeannie and I worked with them, to watch that shift that took place, and to see 36 people walk out of the room with smiles, shaking hands, hugging us, wouldn't even make eye contact when we started 2 hours earlier. Pretty exciting to watch the transformation. And so we invite you to take the tools and share them as far and as wide as you can. It will give you opportunities to learn forgiveness. And as you have the courage to stay tapped into that process, the changes that take place are monumental. Gee, do you have anything in the chat room of anyone asking questions that we might answer or support? Oh, cool. Go for it.
Actually, we have someone in the chat room, and she was wanting to know, she feels like, let me scroll back up here, and she says that she's wondering about going back to work. She says, I need for myself more than anything to work while my daughters are at school, something part-time. I love being a mommy, but it's time for me to be me. She says that, and I was just getting ready to ask her, she said, my girls make me feel guilty, my husband guilty for not working. So I'm assuming, TN, that the girls, the guilt that you're feeling it from your girls is their reaction to you going back to work, and yet your husband is because you're not working. So you can let me know in the chat room if that's, so there's a conflict there within your own family. But Michael, you might want to just present that guilt is within and kind of talk about that a minute and then put your perspective in it as far as her going back to work and what that might look like. I did give her the link to go to the Purpose Personal Power worksheet and to fill that out to find out what her true purpose is. And then I gave my example that, you know, I wasn't able to stay home with Ryan, but when he was a senior in high school, that the most awesome year was the year that I got to stay home with him. And so it's, you know, different for different people, but you might want to add on to that. And then we do have two callers.
Cool. That's a beautiful example of that the old idea in this culture of damned if you do and damned if you don't. And the reason why one is damned if they do and damned if they don't is because the damnation that they're experiencing is inside of them. If I have guilt, I can use that guilt as part of the perceptual put in my mind for anything. Well, somebody wants me to do this, and I'm not doing it, so I'm guilty. And somebody wants me to do that, and I'm not doing it, so I'm guilty. And they're opposites, exactly what you're speaking of here. So my invitation to you would be that the first order of business has nothing to do with going to work or staying home. I applaud you for being a mom. I applaud you for the humongous task that you've taken on of functioning out of so much love that you bring into the world these new lives and then are there to nurture them, to care for them, and to bring them up into the world. It is an awesome task that because kings want slaves, kings have kind of set up a whole cultural idea that, you know, give rise to those babies, then give them to us so we can make them our slaves, and you go back and be a slave. Go back and get a job. That's a mindset of the culture, and many women are bought into that mindset, and they, if a woman is a career woman, oftentimes they kind of, at least so women who stayed with their children have told me, have shared with me and had to work through, oftentimes they look down their noses at those women who are just mothers. You're doing one of the most awesome tasks in the world, and guilt does not belong in that game. However, if there's guilt in your mind, then someone who would give you that look because you're just a mom, while your mind might say, they make me feel guilty, what that look is showing you is the content in your mind, which is the chemistry of your cell, that doesn't belong in you. And so guilt resonated, and one thinks it's because of this. The only reason there's guilt about being home with your children is because inside of you is guilt. And if that guilt is resonated at the same time as you think about being at home with your children, then your mind will tell you, well, see, I'm feeling it because of this. But that's called denial. And remember, denial leads to dissociation. So when I talk about, in this case, being home as a mom, and therefore I'm guilty, as though that cause of the guilt is being home as a mom, then I'm cut off. I'm dissociated. When I'm living in denial, and our definition in this work of denial is I speak about something, I have some sort of turmoil or pain inside of me, and I speak about something outside of me as cause. The cause of guilt around being a stay-at-home mom is the fact that there's guilt in you. And when those brain cells fire at the same time as stay-at-home mom, then there's a result called guilt attached to that. But the cause of the guilt is the fact that there's guilt in your cellular structure. And, of course, as you've given us the example, the exact opposite can also seem to be true to the mind, and that is, well, I'm not, or I want to go to work, therefore I'm guilty. And, again, the guilt is content resonated along with the thought you should be working, then the guilt seems to be caused by I should be working. And my offering to it would be, it is not caused by the idea that you should be working. It's caused by the fact that there's guilt. And so the forgiveness process there would be tapping into that worksheet and beginning in both cases where you've attached guilt to I'm working, I want to go to work, or I should go to work, or you attach guilt to, no, I should, my children are going to make me guilty if I go to work, that you begin to apply forgiveness, not to your children, not to your husband, not to a job, but you apply forgiveness to your guilt, and you begin to remove your guilt. And as you remove your guilt, your husband may say what he says, your children may say what they say, and guilt will not be a part or a factor in what you choose to do. You'll be clear of your guilt. And if you know your purpose, and if your purpose is to be right there with those little girls and just being a mom to them and taking care of them, then with clarity and power, you will be awesome as a mom, and you'll stay right there. And when you remove the guilt as a factor in the whole process, and you do an assessment that, gee, it happens to be time for me to go to work, then whatever your children say, you'll stand as a space of love. You'll be able to communicate with your children in a way that they understand that, you know, gee, due to economic circumstances, which it's insane that we live in a culture where a family, it's next to impossible to survive on one paycheck anymore. Of course, that's part of the game. That's part of the job game, J-O-B, just over broke. Keep people in that posture where everybody's working and the next generation, they get slid into a system where somebody else raises them and somebody else brainwashes them for their purpose. I think it's time for us to wake up as parents and recognize that you are the best one to raise your children in the world. And, of course, if economic circumstances dictate you must do it, then I suggest that you apply forgiveness to your guilt, remove it with a clear conscience, get a job, and find ways to support your children as the awesome mom that you clearly are. And, gee, I haven't thought, if you happen to have access to it on your computer at this moment, that this might be a perfect time to share the Just a Mom story from the internet page that you set up for that. Do you have easy access to that?
I'm looking for it.
Oh, cool.
Okay, yeah, I got it.
So maybe you'd share that.
It says, Just a Mom. I stood in line as a woman named Emily renewed her driver's license at the county clerk's office and was asked her occupation. She hesitated, uncertain how to classify herself. What I mean is, explained the recorder, do you have a job or are you just a... Of course I have a job, snapped Emily, appearing a little embarrassed. I'm a mom. Well, we don't list mom as an occupation, but housewife covers it. And it sounded so demeaning. I forgot all about Emily until one day I found myself in the same situation, this time at our own town hall. The clerk was obviously a career woman, poised, efficient, and possessed of a high-sounding title like official interrogator or town registrar. What is your occupation, she probed. What made me say it, I do not know. The word simply popped out. I am self-employed as a research associate in the field of child development and human relations and executive assistant to the CEO of my company. The clerk paused, ballpoint pen frozen midair, and looked up as though she had not heard correctly. I repeated the title of my chosen field slowly, emphasizing the most significant words. Then I stared with wonder as my pronouncement was written by a hand that was proud to make my acquaintance, written into the public record for all the world to see. It was in bold black ink on the official questionnaire. "Might I ask," she said with new interest, "just what do you do in your field?" Coolly and with a new sense of pride at the realization of just how important my purpose in this world really is, I heard myself reply, "I have a continuing program of research." What mother doesn't? "In the laboratory and in the field." Normally I would have said indoors and out. "I'm working for my master's," the whole blessed family, "and already have 4 credits," all of them their daughters, "and I handle all aspects of our company's business. My work is acknowledged as one of the most demanding in the humanities." Any mother care to disagree with that one? "And I often work 14 hours a day." It's more like 24. "The lives I touch alter the course of history, and my chosen career is more challenging than most run-of-the-mill jobs. The rewards are out of this world, much more than just money, prestige, power, or success." There was an increasing note of respect in the clerk's voice as she completed the form, stood up, and personally ushered me to the door. As I drove into her driveway, buoyed up by how important my position was, I was greeted by my lab assistants, ages 13, 7, and 3. Upstairs, I could hear our experimental model in the child development program, which was their new baby, testing out a new vocal pattern. I had scored a beat on the bureaucracy and the cloud of our culture that they have put on motherhood. It was just erased forever. I had gone on the official record as someone more distinguished and indispensable to mankind than just another mom. Motherhood, what a glorious calling, even when there is no title on the door. Now, grandmothers and grandfathers, recognize your importance as the senior research associates in the field of child development and human relations. Great-grandmothers and great-grandfathers, accept with dignity your role as executive senior research associates. Aunts and uncles, take your place as associate research assistants. And dads, thanks for your part, your love and your support for the most important human being in the world, our family. The most important human grouping in the world, our family. May your troubles be less, your blessings be more, and nothing but happiness comes through your door. May this be the best year yet of your eternal life.
Is everybody breathing? Thank you for reading that, Jeannie. I asked Jeannie to read it because each time I read it, the tears that well up in me as a result of the trauma that goes on in our world, the unnecessary pain that happens in our world, that I see day after day after day because someone convinced a mom and a dad they weren't supposed to be there as the space of love. They were supposed to be doing something different. Gives rise to another opportunity for me to heal my grief at watching the unnecessary pain and trauma in the world due to a misunderstanding of the role parents in our world. And so thank you for giving me the opportunity to breathe through that, Jeannie, and just touch into that. And I'd invite you, and I don't know the name of the person who's in the chat room asking, but I'd invite you to perhaps play the show for your husband tonight when he gets home. And just talk about what your real role is in the world, and perhaps you might see a different quality of support for the role you play. And as you do worksheets on your guilt, which can be resonated by events on either side of the board, we invite you to breathe through and forgive your guilt and let it go. and recognize the awesome role that you play in the world, the miraculous, miraculous role. You know, it becomes sort of commonplace because, well, gee, you know, we have 7.5 billion people and all these babies, but nothing commonplace. It's such a miraculous thing. And thank you for what you do. Every one of you who are moms, and every one of you who are dads. And hopefully, these thoughts will help you to up your game one more level in being that awesome presence of love as a mom or as a dad that you're designed to be, and opening a space for the wholeness of your children and for the ability of your children to maintain that presence of love that they are throughout their growth, their development, the challenges they'll come into in the world, and bringing that true human life forward into the world. There's no greater privilege than that one.
I agree. And we do have two callers. We're down to about 14 minutes. The first caller is there.
Have we completed the conversation in the chat room, sweetie?
Yes.
Any other thoughts? Okay, cool.
No. Area code 949, you're on the air. Who do we have and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Kate, and I'm calling from California. But since there's another caller, I will just kind of defer to that. And if there's time at the end, I'll come back and say hello. But otherwise, you can take your other caller.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
You're on my list, Paula. Did you get your message, by the way, the other day? We've just been kind of running since we our feet hit the ground here in Bristol, Tennessee. We were over in Virginia yesterday at Jenny's parents' farm, and was just getting caught up with all the family dynamics here. So, but you are on my list to call.
Excellent.
Cool. Awesome. And Kate's a young lady who's who's been doing this work for about, I'm not sure, well, we figured out exactly 25, 26 years, and is also in the computer field and talking about helping us to create an app for the worksheet on an Android phone. So that's a pretty cool project. Just one more of the plates we've got spinning, but an important one. So we thank you for that. And Jeannie, you've got another caller?
Yes, it's area code 828. You're on the air. Who do we have and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Magda from Missouri.
Hey, neighbor, how do you be?
Really, really great. I love the story. I'm just a mom. I just laughed out loud at the end of it. It's just great. So thank you, Jeannie, for reading it and Michael for suggesting it.
You're welcome.
So the reason I'm calling is because at our forgiveness support group last Tuesday, we finished your DVD about communication, and then we did a little role play practicing the lovely art of responsibility communication, and a question came up about whether or not the responsibility communication is to be used only with the person who is your trigger, or can it be used with a different person to help process through a problem with a trigger who is not present?
Well, my input on that would be probably the most important person to use responsibility communication with is the person who you see in the mirror. That's the first place to use it. And if you remember in the introduction, the opening of that DVD, I talk about the power of words, and that words are the anti-inhibitor that allow brain cells to fire. And when I use the alternative to responsibility communication as we presented in that particular DVD, the alternative is what we call projection communication. And projection communication is where I live in the lie of the world. It's kind of like the starting of this show is, you know, you made me so mad when you said that I could just scream. And that's an example of projection communication. the way that the mind works is that about 90% of brain chemistry is tied up in inhibiting brain cell firing. And in order to overcome the inhibitors, we need to have an anti-inhibitor. An inhibitor is something that inhibits or stops something from happening. An anti-inhibitor facilitates that something happening. And words are the key. Energetically, words are what give brain cells permission, so to speak, to fire. So when I say the words of projection communication, you made me, whether it's somebody that's in the room or somebody that's not, or whether I'm just looking in the mirror thinking about what, you know, he or she did, then I'm feeding my brain anti-inhibitors, and the only brain cells that can fire are the ones that show me in hallucination that somebody else has caused what's happening inside of me. Projection communication always leads to my mind lying to me. And I think that the cause of what's happening inside of me is outside of me because I've told my mind, mind, you have to show me that it was what he said that caused this in me. So the first person I want to do responsibility communication with and tell the truth is with me. And so the alternative to you made me is, well, you know, when thus and so happened, that really brought up a lot of anger in me. Now I'm telling myself the truth. My mind is now given permission to show me the truth. Literally, the anti-inhibitors, the words that give my mind permission, brain cells permission to fire, are now in line with the truth. I have something in me, and I'm giving my mind permission to show me that it's mine. When I say that it's yours, the only permission I'm giving my mind, the only anti-inhibitors I'm giving my mind are, mind, show me a reality that shows me that somebody else caused this to happen in me. That's the projection communication. The responsibility communication is, mind, show me that what I'm feeling belongs to me and empower me to change that, to heal that. So when I say, you know, that really brought fear, rage, guilt, grief, pain, whatever it is up in me. Now I'm giving my mind permission to show me what's inside of me directly as though it's mine, rather than indirectly through projection. My brain showing me that my pain is caused by you.
Right.
Does that kind of get to your question?
Well, I understand that, and I get that. So where does it fit to then have a responsibility communication with another person?
The same as with yourself. I mean, the first person, in projection communication, we're always telling a lie. In responsibility communication, we're always telling the truth.
Right.
So I want to tell the truth to myself. I want to tell the truth to anyone I'm communicating to or anyone I'm communicating about. If I'm communicating with you about a situation that involves another person who isn't there, and I say, well, you know, Magda, when he said this, he really peeved me. You know, what I'd appreciate you would be a correction, and the correction would look like, well, Michael, it sounds like you're blaming somebody else for what's going on inside of you. Would you care to rephrase that in terms of responsibility communication? Oh, yeah, when he said that, it brought out my anger. So everywhere, every time, I always want to be telling the truth, which means I'm responsible for what's going on inside of me instead of the cultural lie that everybody else is responsible for what's going on inside of me.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think what's happening here is that I wasn't clear about my question with you.
Okay.
I'm talking about whether or not it is appropriate to ask a person for support and direction in healing an issue that has come up when the other person is not there and one is not able to do a responsibility communication with them. And I'm also including the awareness that the responsibility communication would be done in responsible
rather than projective language. In other words, if I were talking to you, Michael, and I'd say, gee, an issue's come up with Chuck, for instance.
He's gone
2 weeks and I can't talk to him. So can you help me? I'd like to heal this. And then to go through the appropriate objective and subjective descriptions and so forth, you know, using the steps and using responsible language, is that, and I think it's an appropriate thing to ask someone for help and for guidance, like, do you have any ideas about how I can go about doing that? But that's what I wanted to ask you. Is that appropriate when we can't have the responsibility communication with the actual trigger person to get support from someone else using that form?
Well, I hear you clearer now. My input on that would be that if I'm very conscious that I'm not just inviting somebody into my pity party,
yes,
because that can become a gossip session. That can become, you know, person that I'm talking about isn't there to correct.
Yes.
When I say, well, you know, when he did this and then he did this and then he did that, I was really angry. And if he were standing there, he might say, whoa, wait a minute, that never happened. That's an hallucination in your mind. That never occurred. I've got to be careful that I'm not roping somebody into my story and simply gossiping, which means that in that case, if I've noticed that perhaps I've had a tendency to do something like that, that might be where I might want to enlist someone in support of my healing, and I don't have to go into the story about who's involved or anything else. It could just be, gee, you know, I have a lot of grief up right now and sadness, and I really need some support in healing my sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, gee, what's the thought? Can I help you identify the thought behind your sadness? Oh, I'm just feeling, gee, you know, what's coming up is loss and abandonment. And I'm realizing that that's an old reality that I need to heal. I don't have to say anything about how such and such did thus and so, which may or may not have happened. It may be nothing but my perception. I don't have to bring somebody into a story that may actually be gossip. And, you know, our definition of gossip is I tell my reality about somebody else as though it must be true about them, when the truth is it may only be true about me. So you'd want to be careful that you can hold clarity in owning what's yours, as opposed to, you know, sort of tugging somebody else into agreement with you. Yeah, they really are like that. You know, that sort of gossip.
Yeah, I understand that. That would be that could be a very easy thing to fall into, because when we're in our stuff, we're not thinking very clearly anyway.
It's seductive. So, it's seductive.
Yeah,
for sure.
I guess that. And the other thing that I'm realizing as you were talking about this is that, you know, one of the first steps is to describe the objective experiences that one is talking about, to check with the other person, the trigger, if in fact we're both on the same page, objectively speaking, before we get to the subjective. And of course, if they're not there, we can't check it. So that kind of,
But I can own that I'm experiencing grief and loss, and I love support in healing it.
Right. Okay.
And so, if you're experiencing grief and loss, you know, if you really take a deep breath and look inside yourself, what's the thought behind that grief and loss? Oh, well, you know, as I really tap into it, it seems like it's probably something about, you know, maybe I don't feel worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to do here is really tap into my worthiness, and that's where I'd do a worksheet and start canceling my goal to feel worthy so that I can look in that deeper part of my mind and I'm not falling into that seductive routine of perhaps gossiping. And we're down to about 40 seconds with the show, so maybe if you wanted to call in right at the opening of the show tomorrow, we could continue this dialogue if there's more to do with it. And in the meantime, we'll just say to everybody,
thank you.
Okay, thanks, Wanda.
Thank you.
We'll just invite everybody to have the best year yet of your eternal life and bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Thanks for being with us. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.